Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to our great big Friday Catholic Answers show. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and we really do have a great big show for you. Second hour internet sensation. Father Mike Schmitz will be here to talk about his brand new book, and I mean brand new, Made for Love from Ignatius Press. You're not going to want to miss Father Schmitz. He's just a he's an internet sensation. I don't know what else need be said about him. This hour, pro-life open forum. We talk about any question you might have about the beginnings of life, ends of life, when life is in crisis. All those things are, or maybe about the laws or regulations that are being passed around the world, or some to be voted on soon. Like I'm thinking about Ireland. I think Ireland's got a big referendum coming up on life issues. 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH, if you prefer the spelled version. Our guest this hour is Dr. George Delgado, Medical Director of Culture of Life Family Healthcare. He's a board-certified physician in family medicine and in hospice and palliative medicine. He also completed the certification program in healthcare ethics offered by the National Catholic Bioethics Center, and he's also our good friend, Dr. George Delgado. Thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome. It's great to be here, Cy.
Did you participate in any Sanctity of Life Month events?
I did. It was a busy time. So my wife and I, a couple of weeks ago, went to the One Life LA event, which is becoming bigger and grander every year. It was absolutely wonderful. Started off with a little rally with some speakers and lots of people, including Archbishop Gomez there at the center of L.A. downtown at the Old Town, the historic foundation site of Los Angeles. Then we marched about a mile to a nearby park, and there was a big stage with a huge video display with wonderful speakers and just a great feeling of camaraderie and pro-life spirit. So that was a great way to start it off. And the next weekend, we went up to San Francisco for the Walk for Life West Coast. And that is still the biggest event on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Huge crowds there. We started off with a mass with Archbishop Corleone at the Cathedral of the Assumption of the Blessed Mother. And then walked down to the Civic Center where we heard first heard some speeches with the Silent No More Awareness campaign that's co-sponsored by Priests for Life and Anglicans for Life. Got to say hello to my good friend, Father Frank Pavone. And then we shifted our attention to the main stage where we had some another great set of speakers there who really got everybody fired up and got us ready to march. Then we walked down Market Street, and it was just a beautiful San Francisco day, more like a San Francisco spring day than a winter day, fortunately. And it was really fantastic.
Well, I guess I shouldn't be surprised that you hit all the big pro-life events on the West Coast during the month. A couple questions for you to start with today, because we actually had a caller yesterday call about the situation in Canada and wanted some help on how do you explain to people that it's not morally right to refer someone for suicide. But maybe you know about the situation in Canada. You can tell us something about that and what the proper response is.
Well, start off with the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario. And just a little background. In Canada, the licensure and the control of the physicians is not always directly by the government, but these medical societies and colleges have a lot more power than the United States, where in the United States and in many other countries, they are really professional bodies. And in Canada, they do have more jurisdictional power. And the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario passed a policy that will require doctors to refer patients for medical practices to which they object, especially euthanasia and abortion. And previously, physicians, now it's not, at this point, not forcing physicians to perform euthanasia or abortion, but it's saying they must make that referral. So, of course, this referral would constitute a participation in a grave evil, because all of us who are well-grounded in our natural law and in Christian principles know that abortion is an intrinsic evil, and by that it means that direct abortion is never acceptable. It's always wrong. There are no situations where it can be justified. And euthanasia, the same thing. And by euthanasia, of course, you mean an action or an omission that intends to and does lead to the death of an individual. So that is in contradistinction to withdrawing a treatment that is either futile or that is becoming burdensome. And that burdensome treatment could even include feeding and hydration, and there are sometimes when giving food and water actually hurts the patient. So it does not mean that euthanasia does not mean that euthanasia means you're doing something with the intention of killing the patient. So this goes totally against our Hippocratic tradition as physicians and for all healthcare practitioners, where we are called to and we swear to uphold life, protect life, cure disease, save life, and heal patients as well as treat their symptoms to make them more comfortable. So euthanasia and abortion in no way do that. All they do is end a perceived problem by ending the person's life. So it is a grave and a blatant violation of the conscience rights of these physicians and other healthcare workers in Canada, in Ontario specifically, that they are going to be forced to make these referrals against their conscience. And of course, we know that by doing this, not only are they violating the rights of these individual good physicians, they are also going to be to the detriment of the medical profession and to the care of patients in general. Because any time a physician can be seen or perceived or is a healer and a killer at the same time, then there's no way a patient can put unconditional trust in that physician and do what's best for the patient. The patient is always going to worry about, well, is that doctor going to kill me when he can't help me? Or is that doctor going to pressure me to kill my unborn baby when he feels or she feels that there's no good treatment left for me as a pregnant mother? So it really erodes that really sacrosanct patient-physician relationship, and it does a great harm to the profession because the profession will start to see itself more in a killing light. And we didn't go into medicine to be killers. We went into medicine to be healers. This policy, fortunately the physicians fought back and it went before the courts. But unfortunately, in a 46-page decision, according to LifeSite News, three justices, Herman Wilton Siegel, Richard Lococo, and Wendy Matheson, held that, quote, the evidence in the record establishes a real risk of a deprivation of equitable access to health care. But in fact, there's no evidence whatsoever that doctors of good conscience, by not referring for this procedure, is going to lead to decreased access to health care. That's a big lie that's been used here in the United States also in order to try to pressure physicians into making referrals against their consciences. So the court unfortunately upheld the college, and now these physicians are really put in an untenable position. Do they sacrifice their livelihoods and their professional standing by sticking with their consciences, or do they make these referrals and compromise their sincerely and strongly held religious and ethical beliefs? Very sad day in Canada.
Yeah, it seems to be one of the strategies of those who are pushing for medicine to, just freely attack life at all stages. To just say this is standard medical practice, and if you're going to be a doctor or you're going to be a hospital, you got to go along with standard medical practice. That it seems almost like a trick, kind of, or a stratagem.
It is. It definitely is a stratagem. They're saying that modern medicine has to be taking en bloc. Everything that goes along with it, everything that's practiced freely today, must be included in any kind of package of medical care that you offer. So it again, the opponents of life have rewritten the narrative, they've set the rules, and they've made these killing procedures part of either reproductive health rights, is what they call it with abortion, and part of end-of-life care is what they call it with euthanasia. And they've been very clever, and they've been successful so far, but we are not finished fighting back, and we will fight back.
We do have to take a break. Dr. George Delgado is our guest, the medical director for the Culture of Life Family Healthcare. We'll be right back with Open Forum, Pro-Life Open Forum. Your questions for Dr. Delgado right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Thank you for listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Howdy, folks. This is Jimmy Akin, and I'm here to tell you about the 20 Answers Challenge. Here's how it works. When you purchase the sampler of all 26 books in the 20 Answers series, we're going to knock 60% off the price. Then you can challenge yourself to finish them all this Lent and Easter season. And this year, to make it easier, we're offering free shipping on the sampler if you live in the continental United States. That's 60% off, free shipping, and over 500 answers to questions you've had about the Catholic faith. Join us this Lent and Easter to take the 20 Answers Challenge, and together we can be part of something great. Call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com now to get your set and begin taking the 20 Answers Challenge today.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn, that one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, our super big Friday show. Dr. George Delgado this hour, next hour, internet sensation. Father Mike Schmitz will be here to talk about his new book, Made for Love. Lots of calls, and I want to get to the calls, but I have to ask you about something else, if I may, real quick before we go to calls. And maybe real quick is not the way to answer this question, so don't take that as a limitation. But we're hearing news about in the United Kingdom. This idea that I don't know if it's courts or the government or who is allowing them to make babies that are that have three parents, that biologically they're made from three people instead of being born of two. You've heard of this?
Yes, and you know, in the UK and in other countries, the government is more heavily involved in regulation of in vitro fertilization and related procedures. So they're. They needed to have this approved by the government agency. And indeed, I think it was yesterday or today, they approved a treatment for mitochondrial disease that will involve the creation of an embryo, a child, with three parents, material from three parents. So people are wondering, how the heck can that happen? Well, first of all, let's just explain what the mitochondrial diseases are. Mitochondrial diseases are something that is really hot in science right now, where we're discovering that a lot of diseases where we didn't know the cause are actually the causes being found in genetic deficiencies in the mitochondria. And mitochondria are very small organelles or very smart parts of cells that are in all of our cells that are known as the power plants of the cells. They provide the energy for the cells, for everything the cells do. So you can imagine our world right now with all of our electronic sophistication. Let's say all of our power plants went down, or a large percentage of them. It would cause a great deal of havoc and problems, right? It would cause a lot of, quote, disease amongst us in our social and business engagements and enterprises. Well, then imagine that analogy applied to a cell that doesn't have enough energy, enough power to do what it should, is not going to be able to do things well. And it's going to lead to a lot of different diseases, including a lot of neurodegenerative diseases, problems with the brains, problems with the nerves, a whole host of things. And so up until now, we haven't had any treatments. So scientists got the bright idea, well, maybe we could somehow replace those genes, which replacing those genes in a person that's already born in and of itself is a noble cause and ethically in and of itself would not be problematic. But it's a path they've chosen to replace those genes. And in fact, what they've decided to do is via in vitro fertilization, which as Catholics we know is an intrinsically evil way to create a person. That person who's created, of course, is not evil and does not bear any blame for what happened, but that person has the right to be dignified by being created the way God intended, which is through natural intercourse between mother and father. So that right is violated from the get-go, and the new person is created in a test tube or a petri dish in a laboratory. Then, once the nucleus of the mother and the nucleus of the father unite in what's called the pronucleus, before that cell has a chance to divide, so even before it becomes an embryo, at that stage it's called a zygote. But a zygote is just as much a human being as you and I are. It just happens to be the very earliest form of the human being, the one cell form. Well, that nucleus is removed from the cell, and then it's taken and put into another mother's egg. And that other mother's egg has had the nucleus removed, so it's sort of an empty egg. The analogy I have for this is that imagine if you had a person who had a diseased body, but the brain was in good shape. Would you allow them to transplant the brain from the healthy person into the body of a person with a healthy body? Probably not. A lot of ethical problems there. Well, they do this. They transplant that nucleus into that new egg and stimulate it, so then that zygote divides and becomes an embryo and continues on the development. So why exactly do they do this? Well, it turns out that the mitochondria have their own DNA. They sort of have their own little design inside of them. They don't rely on the chromosomes of the main cell. And the mitochondria come exclusively or almost exclusively from the mother's egg. The sperm transmits very little or no mitochondria. And so it's the mother that transmits mitochondrial diseases. And so by taking only the main genetic material from the mother, but not taking her mitochondria, then you can avoid these mitochondrial diseases. But in doing that, you violated the rights of that new human being by creating him or her outside of the marital bond, by creating him in the test tube. And you've also introduced a third parent in a way because you're getting the mitochondrial DNA from another woman. So now you have a new human being who has inherited genetic material from three persons. That's a total violation of God's design. So a lot of ethical problems with that, and also potential medical problems because we don't really know what's going to happen, how these people are going to develop, if they're going to have some latent diseases, some problem in development. This is really uncharted territory, and we're conducting experimentation on young, new human persons who cannot give consent for experimentation. So it's a violation of their right of autonomy to have a right to know what is going to happen to them and have a say in what's going to happen to them. And we're applying experimental procedures whose long-term effects are unknown.
Yeah, right. We're basically gambling with other people's lives.
That's right.
Well, as I said, lots and lots of calls today. Shall we go to calls?
Let's do it.
Again, the number 888-318-7884. It is pro-life open forum today with Dr. George Delgado. If you have a question on ethical concerns involving the beginnings, the middle, the end of life, we are happy to take your call. 888-318-7884. Let's start with Stacy in Santa Cruz, California, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app, an app everyone should have. Thanks, Stacy, for your call. Your question for Dr. Delgado.
Hi there. Thanks so much for taking my call. First of all, I was at the Walk for Life in San Francisco this last weekend. It was my first time going, and it was so wonderful, and I really recommend it to anyone who's up for going in the West Coast. So
cool.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So 2 years ago, I was pregnant with my daughter, and unfortunately, at 15 weeks, my water ruptured. We were given a less than 1% chance at her survival, and it was definitely the darkest time in my life. We were urged to abort, mostly because of the risk of chorioamnionitis, which is the infection of the fetal membrane. And they told us that the only successful treatment for that would be delivering the baby, if I were to get it. And because like antibiotics aren't as effective, and it's just really deadly for the baby and the mother, and I could go into septic shock, and there were, you know, very scary things. I did not abort, and actually my my daughter is almost 2 years old. She's completely 100% healthy, totally normal, happy little girl.
Wonderful.
So I did end up getting chorioamnionitis when I was 28 weeks, but you know, they just delivered her prematurely. And I've always had this question in the back of my mind that and here's my question for you, that if I or any woman in my predicament were to get chorioamnionitis before viability, what would be the ethical thing to do? Because obviously delivering it would, delivering the child before 24 weeks, I mean, especially, you know, 15 weeks when I ruptured, would be a death sentence, but I don't know how I would do it without me being susceptible to septic shock as well.
Right, yeah, you propose a very interesting scenario. First of all, let's just talk about your case since you brought it up, just for the education of our listeners. When there is a rupture of membranes early, doctors often will give this advice that you might get chorioamnionitis, in which case it could be very serious and you could die. And that's true. All that is very true. The recommendation, though, was flawed because all women who have this early rupture of membranes don't develop chorioamnionitis, which is, like you said, an infection of the membranes enveloping the baby and the placenta. Only some of them do. And so the ethical treatment there would be to do as you did, and is to wait and watch and to take precautions, maybe to take antibiotics to try to prevent the chorioamnionitis and to be on bed rest and all the things that you probably did. Because oftentimes the leak will seal, and once it seals, then the outside world is again separated from the inside world. The big danger is when the outside world communicates with the inside world, then bacteria can go inside and cause infection. But sometimes it will seal, like in your case. Now, of course, you probably had some defect in your membranes, and so you later on developed infection. Once there is infection, then, of course, it's a much more serious situation. And currently, our current state of knowledge and practice is that the really only effective treatment for chorioamnionitis is, quote, emptying of the uterus, because it's analogous to an abscess. An abscess, of course, is a pocket of infection, and the abscess, to be successfully treated, really needs to be drained and needs to be emptied out. There have been some isolated cases of women being treated who had chorioamnionitis with antibiotics aggressively who have done well, but those are really rare case reports. So I would say that a woman choosing that course, that would probably be considered heroic and would not be required at this point in our understanding of it, of chorioamnionitis. And so having the treatment of emptying the uterus, or DNC, which they would call it, would actually not be considered a direct abortion. It would be considered an indirect abortion, analogous to the situation when a woman has a tubal pregnancy and the portion of the tube is removed. So there's one action that is removing the contents of the uterus with an intent of curing an infection. The two results of that are, number one, you clear out the infected tissue, and number two, you end the life of the unborn baby if the baby is previable. And the second consequence is not wanted, but it is foreseen, and there's no better way to act. So I've just described the application of the principle of double effect, and so in good conscience, a person could very well take that, accept that treatment and have that in good conscience. Now, it's important to keep in mind that this is far different from what we call direct abortion, or most people just call abortion, where you end the life of the baby, let's say because you don't want to stress on the mother's mental health or the mother's heart disease or something like that. In that case, the emptying of the uterus is not a direct treatment for the disease. And we can finish this on the other side of the break if you like, because there are a couple of nuances that I think need to be mentioned.
Fair enough. Stacy, I hope you can hang around. We will take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more Pro-Life Open Forum with our good friend, Dr. George Delgado, Medical Director of the Culture of Life Family Healthcare. We'll be right back with that after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
EWTN's cathedrals across America and the Diocese of Jefferson City, Missouri invite you to a celebration of apostolic succession as they welcome their new apostle and shepherd, Father W. Sean McKnight. From the Cathedral of St. Joseph, the Mass of Ordination and Installation of Father W. Sean McKnight as the fourth bishop of Jefferson City. Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern, here on EWTN Television and Radio Classics.
Do you subscribe to Catholic Answers Magazine? We hope, but if not, right now we've got a deal that you're going to love. We've reduced the price and thrown in a free digital subscription when you subscribe. That's right. Subscriptions to Catholic Answers Magazine just got cheaper, $10 less on one-year subscriptions and $20 less on two-year subscriptions. And right now, when you purchase a subscription, you get a subscription to the digital edition added to your order for free. With a deal like that, it's the perfect gift for friends, family members, seminarians, your priest, even yourself. When you get right down to it, what other gift has the potential to touch hearts and reap eternal rewards? Log on today to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com and sign up yourself, your friends, and your family for a magazine that is bound to make a difference in their lives and the lives of those they meet. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Tim Staples, Trent Horn, Cy Kellett, Chris Check, Carlo Broussard. Our on-fire lineup of speakers will inform and inspire your audience to grow in their Catholic faith. For more information on booking a Catholic Answers speaker for your event, visit CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, Pro-Life Open Forum on this Friday. Hope your Friday is going well. Glad you're here with us. Thanks so much for being with us. Dr. George Delgado, Medical Director of the Culture of Life Family Healthcare, is our guest this hour. Pro-Life Open Forum is our topic, and we're at the moment talking with Stacy in Santa Cruz, California, about Doctor, I'm going to let you describe. If I try to say what we're talking about, I will get it wrong. So we were discussing.
Sure, we're talking about chorioamnionitis, which is when a pregnant woman has an infection of the membranes of pregnancy, which include the amniotic sac, and that's why it's amnionitis, and chorio, the chorion, which is the baby's contribution to the placenta. So when you have the placenta and the amniotic sac infected, and we were talking about that. Really, right now, the only surefire treatment for that is emptying the contents of the uterus, that is a DNC, analogous to an abscess that must be lanced and drained. And in doing so, of course, if the baby is not at the point of viability, can't survive outside of the uterus, then the baby's going to die. But that we can justify this using the principle of double effect. And what I wanted to do was just shed some light that proponents of abortion, whenever discussions come up about laws that limit the abortion, that they often use this argument that if you make abortion somehow illegal, if you declare the unborn child a person, then women who have conditions such as chorioamnionitis won't be able to get treatment because it'll be considered an abortion. But that's not true, because right now it's not considered an abortion. This is just considered medical treatment. The technical sort of philosophical term we use is that this is an indirect abortion, and that what most people consider an abortion is what we call a direct abortion, because it's a direct killing. This is an indirect killing of the baby as a sort of a side effect of a medical treatment. And so it has far different philosophical, ethical, and legal implications. And so any kind of personhood laws or laws that would outlaw most abortion would not make these kinds of medical procedures illegal at all, as they would not make treatment for tubal pregnancies illegal. Those are not considered to be abortions. So I just wanted to make that clear, because sometimes the opponents of pro-life laws will try to muddle the waters by bringing things like this into it.
Stacey, how does all that strike you?
Yeah, thanks so much. It brings me a lot of relief. And if there are any listeners out there that go through something like I've been through, I don't lose hope. And there's a slogan in the support group community for this: is where there's a heartbeat, there's hope. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Stacey. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your hope, Stacey.
And Dr. Delgado, it strikes me that a lot of people think that the teaching of the Catholic Church, I don't know if people think this or people just say this because they want to make some kind of points in a debate or something, but that the Catholic Church values the life of the child more highly than the life of the mother. And all the things that you just said, I think, help to make clear that is not the case.
Absolutely not. And I think this is, again, another strategy of the anti-life forces, because, you know, the Catholic Church is the strongest voice, strongest pro-life voice in the world. And the Catholic Church always clearly states in its official teachings and in its pastoral outreach that the life of the mother and the life of the unborn baby are equal. They're both equal in the eyes of God, and so they need to be treated equally. That's all the Church seeks to do. It doesn't seek to sacrifice one for the expense of the other, but to treat them equally, which is how we should all treat one another, really.
Pro-Life Open Forum, we'd love your question. If you have a question about beginnings, middles, ends of life, life in crisis, how to address various ethical issues that come at those times when life is in crisis, please give us a call, 888-318-7884. We go now to Diane in Fort Collins, Colorado, listening on AM 1060. Diane, thank you so much for waiting. Your question for Dr. Delgado.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I have someone in my life who is pregnant with twins, and the twins have something called twin-to-twin transfusion, where one twin is giving their blood to the other twin, causing that twin to really kind of wither away and causing the other twin to have high blood pressure because it's getting too much blood for its heart. So they've been advised with two choices. One was to go in and try to reverse the transfusion so that the one twin would get the blood back that it's transfusing into its twin, or to cauterize the umbilical cord of the one that's giving its blood to the other, which would cause that baby to die. To go in and reverse the transfusion gave them both a 60-40 chance of surviving, and to go in and cauterize the umbilical cord of the one twin would give the other twin, you know, almost 100% chance of surviving. So they're in a very difficult situation, and I'm the one Catholic that probably looks to the teachings of the Church, and so I was just wondering what, you know, my advice to them was, well, you try to say both and then you let God be God, but I'm not sure, you know, if that was the best or what else I could say to them.
Yeah, no, that's another very interesting situation. And these twins are identical twins, or what we call monozygotic twins. This is one of the reasons why monozygotic twins really, twins also, and twins in general, but are generally high-risk pregnancies because different problems can happen. So when monozygotic twins share a placenta is when this can happen. So they've shared a placenta. Mm-hmm. And some of the blood vessels kind of get intermixed, and one of the twins is getting too much blood, and the other twin is not getting enough, and that's what can often happen. So, and it sounds like the procedure where they would go in and cauterize the one twin's umbilical vessels, that really is a direct assault on that twin, and it's really killing that unborn baby to sacrifice the sibling. So from an ethical standpoint, that would not be acceptable because the action is actually a direct assault on that unborn child. The effect that's desired is a good effect, and that is having at least one of the twins survive, but the way to get there is flawed. While the other procedure, where it's an attempt to correct the circulation, is aimed at correcting the underlying defect, it's not aimed at harming one twin or the other. And by trying to decrease the blood flow to one and increase the blood flow to the other would be perfectly acceptable and would be the desired treatment, because the effect, although there is maybe perhaps a 40% chance of side effects, the chance of success is, you know, 60%. And it's not so much, although it is partly that you're trying to help both twins, but it's from an ethical standpoint, the key thing here is that the action being taken in and of itself is not an evil action. It's a good action. The good action is trying to fix the circulation. So that's why it's different from the other one, where the action itself is a direct assault. It's killing the other unborn baby. So because of that, then that's the preferred action. And there might be more than one preferred action. As long as the action is an attempt to correct the circulation, and even if some of the effects of that action could be negative, as long as that's the best way to proceed and the positive effects are at least of the same magnitude, in which case they're of higher magnitude, then that would be a good way to go. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes. So then, you know, if they're looking for people's advice, family members' advice as to what to do, and somebody should recommend that they do the cauterization because then one baby survives, what's the culpability on that person that would give that advice, you know, someone they trust and would look up to?
Well, culpability is always very difficult because we can never judge people personally. We certainly can judge objective actions and even objective advice, but we can never, you know, make a judgment on someone personally. The other thing, the person giving the advice, we always have to, even from an objective standpoint, if that person doesn't have a clear understanding of the natural law and of Catholic ethics, then that person given faulty advice would not even objectively be as culpable, and certainly would be less culpable than somebody, let's say, like myself or you, who had a clear understanding and went ahead and gave poor advice. So we always have to keep that in mind, that we don't know what the person's motivations are, and we don't know the person's formation, and formation can have a lot to do with it, especially in our society here, where unfortunately we've become so utilitarian, especially in medicine, so that there's often a technological imperative, and that means that if there's a way to do, if there's an ability to do something, then there's an imperative, there's a demand to do it. And so we can create babies in the laboratory, and we can create babies with three parents, so we should do that in order to prevent mitochondrial diseases. And we should do IVF because people have infertility. So that technological imperative and that utilitarianism then is applied to this situation, where people say, well, gosh, I don't want a 40% chance of my baby being harmed, then I'm going to kill one to have about 100% chance of a healthy baby. So you see that kind of logic and that kind of ethic is applied, and so we have to keep that in mind when we talk about culpability, just from an objective standpoint. That doesn't lessen our obligation to educate people. We still need to educate people and present them with the truth, but we always have to present it charitably and present the truth in a way that is most acceptable to them. Because if we present the truth in a way that is not charitable, then they may dismiss it out of hand, and we may be worse off than if we tried to give the truth in maybe a staged fashion in ways that they can accept. So we always have to keep that in mind, that it's not always just the message, it's how that message is delivered, and that, of course, depends on we, the messengers.
Okay, Diane?
Great. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for the call. Again, it is Pro-Life Open Forum on Catholic Answers Live today. If you have questions about ethical issues at the beginning, middle, or end of life, often these things come when there's a crisis, but sometimes there are longer-term questions having to do with the care of the elderly or the care of the disabled. Any question having to do with life is welcome today, and we have the guy to give you the answers, Dr. George Delgado, a longtime physician and very well trained in Catholic ethical principles from the National Catholic Bioethics Center. Please give us a call if you have a question, 888-318-7884. The number 888-318-7884. We'll get to your calls right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Call now, Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Tim Staples, and I'm challenging you to take the 20 Answers Challenge. Here's how the challenge works. When you purchase the sampler of all 26 books in the 20 Answers series, we're going to knock 60% off the price, and we're challenging you to finish them all this Lent and Easter season. And this year, to make it easier, we're offering free shipping on the sampler if you live in the continental United States. That's 60% off free shipping and over 500 answers to questions you have about the Catholic faith. Join us this Lent and Easter to take the 20 Answers Challenge, and together we can be part of something great. Call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com now to get your set and begin taking the 20 Answers Challenge today.
Just like the saints of the Counter-Reformation, our own souls are in constant need of reform, of reconversion to God and His will for us. We struggle with sin. We become distracted in prayer. We find it hard to be loving and easy to be selfish. In Reform Yourself, Sean McAfee shows you how these magnificent saints can be guides to your own personal transformation. We all need to reform our souls. Let the saints who reformed the church show you how. Order your copy of Reform Yourself today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. This whole month, actually, maybe even more than this month, I got to ask Carrie when this ends. The 20 Answers sampler is on sale. All 26 books in the 20 Answers series are being offered for up to 60% off the normal price of the books. Also, you're getting free shipping on that. It's the 20 Answers Challenge. The way you take the challenge is you get those books for 60% off and free shipping, and then we challenge you to read all 26 by the end of the Eastertide. A couple of books, the end of life issues is a recent one. Abortion is one of the core ones there. But they're on all kinds of topics, whether it's on the death penalty or Jehovah's Witnesses or Mormons or the Immaculate Conception. It's all there. Miracles, there's 26 of them, and they're 60% off right now. You just go to shop.catholic.com to get that 60% off and free shipping. shop.catholic.com. Our number again, 888-318-7884, Pro-Life Open Forum this hour. Next hour, Father Mike Schmitz will be in here, 888-318-7884. I want to share, I've been hanging out a little bit on YouTube while we're having this discussion, Dr. Delgado, and a YouTuber asks, is there an official teaching from the Catholic Church on when life begins and abortion?
Sure, and I think I'll take that in the reverse order. Talk about abortion first, and it's very clear that both the Bible and the Catechism of the Catholic Church are, you know, have very strong foundations against abortion, as well as very early church teachings. In fact, the Didache, which is the writings of the early apostles, which was the teachings of Jesus' apostles, clearly states that abortion is an evil. And the Bible, of course, several places give the admonition that thou shalt not kill. And the Catechism of that Catholic Church makes it very clear that direct abortion is an intrinsic evil, like we said earlier, and that it is always wrong. So taking the life of an innocent person, whether that person is unborn or already born, is an intrinsic evil. So there really should be no doubt about that. Now, the question about when life begins, by that, of course, I think the person who wrote that meant when a human life begins, when a human individual begins. And that's really, if you think about it, more the responsibility and the domain of science. And the science of embryology has been very clear, and the Church is pointing to this as saying that this is the truth, is that when the sperm and the egg unite, or in the case of, let's say, cloning, when you have a full complement of chromosomes, which is 22 pairs each of 23 chromosomes, a total of 46 chromosomes, that there you have a new human individual. And that new human individual, of course, does what all human individuals do, and it does what it's genetically programmed to do, and that is to start to develop in the way that is in keeping with its state of development. So if it's a zygote, the one-cell new human organism, then it divides into two and becomes a two-cell embryo. If it's a two-cell embryo, it divides and becomes a four-cell embryo, along and long and long, and then when the embryo is at about 7 to 8 weeks of life, we now call it a fetus, just another name for it, just because now the all the organs are formed. Fetus is just a Latin word that means little baby. And then when the fetus exits the birth canal and is in the outside world, we suddenly call it a newborn or a neonate in medical terms. So we have these different terms for the person along the different road of development. And then you have a neonate or a newborn for the first month. After that, we call it a baby. Once the baby starts walking at about 1 year of age, we call it a toddler. We call it a toddler until about age three, when we start calling it a preschooler. And then it's a school child, and then it's an adolescent, then it's an adult, and then it becomes a senescent adult, an aging adult. So we have names for this individual along the line of continuum. That's all they are, just labels to describe where that person is along the continuum. So we know from science then that a new human organism begins when that sperm and egg unite for most of us. And then the question is, well, is that human individual a person? So personhood is really more of a philosophical and perhaps a religious question, not so much a scientific question. When is a human individual a person? And the Church talks about something called ensoulment, when that individual has a soul. Now, we know that all of us have souls, and we know that the most unborn babies in the womb have souls. And so when is that soul actually placed in there? Because we know that that soul is placed in there by God. And the Church and the Catechism has said that when that ensoulment actually takes place has not been revealed to us directly by God. It's not in Scripture. It's not by extra-scriptural revelation to the apostles. So it hasn't been given directly. However, using the reason that God gives us, our rational minds that God has given us, Pope John Paul II stated quite eloquently that we can reason that the individual is a person from the get-go, because there is no other logical point that would make sense for God to place that soul other than at the very beginning. It just doesn't make sense. And so we can conclude then that the human individual, the new human life, is a person from the very, very first instant of new life. And that's really what the church holds and essentially teaches, but with that proviso that it's in a way, it's kind of a theological and philosophical assumption, but it's a very solid assumption that we can all hang our hats on that and we can take that to the bank.
Well, thank you. I'm actually glad that because that's a very basic question. And sometimes we get to the esoteric and we don't always review for people the teaching on life. I do want to get to some more calls, a whole bunch of folks, and we'll try to get as many as we can before the end of the hour. Alice in Bismarck, North Dakota, listening on Real Presence Radio. You are on with Dr. George Delgado. Your question, please.
Hi. I wonder if you can, if you know a group of these stem cell institutes that are good and others that are not. I Googled this one in our area called Stem Cell Institute of America. And at
yes.
the same time, I got a Dr. Chris Centeno called them a bait and switch enterprise. And so I think people are probably being led astray. And when I looked at Stem Cell Institute of America, it did say they used aborted fetuses the first time I looked. Then I went back, I don't know, a week or something later, and it didn't say that. Plus, they changed their name to Stem Cell Health or something. And so it's really a concern because they've been advertising a lot.
Yes, so the use of stem cells is becoming more and more popular, both for just basic science experimentation as well as treatment of diseases. Now, treatment of diseases and experimentation with so-called adult stem cells, and these are cells that do not require the ending of the life of an embryo. This is totally acceptable, and in fact, all of the clinical successes, you know, over 300 clinical diseases have been treated with adult stem cell research. This is great and laudable. However, the use of so-called embryonic stem cells is really goes against the natural law and against church teaching because it requires the killing of an early embryo. Or sometimes if they've harvested cells from an aborted farther along baby, then there is a connection with evil there. The sort of gray area are the induced pluripotent cells. These are cells that are adult cells that are taken and that are chemically and genetically converted into very primitive cells. Most theologians and ethicists feel that this is acceptable. Some argue that actually there is an embryo that is produced in doing that. I really don't think so, but that's why I call that somewhat of a gray area. Hope that answers your question.
Alice, thank you very much for the call. I'm going to try to get one more in before we go, so I'll let you go. Let's go to Sonia on the road in Kansas, listening on the Catholic Answers live app. Your question real quick, Sonia. We'll try to get it in.
Is there any evidence that children born from abortion are actually violent?
Children born from abortion?
Yes.
I mean, or do you mean children born out
because
of rape?
For aborting a baby that was conceived that way.
I'm sorry, Sonia. I'm just a little bit confused. You mean like they tried to abort the baby, but the baby lived?
No, they say that the reason for aborting babies is that are conceived from rape.
Oh, from rape. Okay, so babies conceived from rape. Doctor, I'm sorry, that doesn't leave us much time. Is there any evidence that they're more violent?
I haven't seen any evidence. However, if this is a violent rapist, the genetic tendency to be violent, you know, comes from both parents. So if one parent is violent by tendency, then the offspring of that person may have more of an inclination to violent tendencies.
I'm sorry, Sonia, we didn't get to have a little more detail with your question, but thank you for the question. Thanks for everybody who joined us this hour. Dr. George Delgado, thank you for a very enlightening pro-life open forum hour.
You're very welcome. It's great being with you.
And people can find you at the Culture of Life Family Healthcare. You want to give out the website?
Sure. The website is colfs.org. Also visit abortionpillreversal.com for our abortion pill reversal program.
Abortionpillreversal.com or colfs.org. Next hour, we're going to talk about the brand new book, Made for Love, Same-Sex Attraction in the Catholic Church, from Father Michael Schmitz, internet sensation. Hang on, and we will get to that. If you've got a question for Father Schmitz, 888-318-7884. We'll be right back with that after this on Catholic Answers Live.